where we are right now is we're creating an economic development engine that is really aligned with the targeted industries specific to Broward County, specific to the South Florida region. So these are the emerging high tech sectors, if you will, the industries of the future, where there's a lot of investment, a lot of industries relocating or creating satellite operations or entrepreneurs starting businesses.
Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Hi, my name is John Wensveen. I am the Chief Innovation Officer here at Nova Southeastern University in Fort Lauderdale, and I am also the Executive Director of the Alan B. Levan NSU Broward Center of Innovation.
Well, John, thanks so much for taking the time to join us on the Ivy Podcast today. A lot of exciting developments going here in South Florida, as you and I were just chatting about. But before we get into a lot of those exciting projects, tell us a little bit more about yourself, about your background, kind of very high level timeline of your career path so far.
Well, thank you for having me. First of all, I'm really grateful for the opportunity to be able to speak to you and thoroughly enjoy these types of conversations and the way that I think it's going to go. I always get a little scared when somebody asks to talk about my background because it starts at the age of three. So I don't want to scare the listening audience that we're going to go through every year of my life, but we do have to go back to the age of three. And it really sets the foundation for everything that I've ever done in my professional career and has really had an impact on my personal life at the same time. But when I was 3 years old, I was born and raised in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and the west coast of Canada. And my parents were taking our family on our very first airplane ride. And we were heading from Vancouver to Honolulu, Hawaii. And my parents had dressed me up in a US Air Force pilot suit. So I had the uniform with all the badges and lapels and wings and really excited, I'm told, back then. And here we are on this airplane. And we boarded this bright orange jumbo 747 aircraft. And the company at the time was called CP Air, which later became Canadian Airlines, which then eventually became Air Canada. And as we were taxiing out to the runway, there was an engine malfunction. It literally caught fire and the airplane came to a stop and they had to evacuate the aircraft. And we literally jumped out the side of the airplane. And from that moment on, I was completely addicted to aviation, not knowing that that was actually going to be my career. And I wanted to become a pilot. And while everybody else in my family was scared to death of airplanes, I fell in love with them. And I just wanted to fly. And I was very fortunate to start doing that at a very young age. But what I learned is that I was more interested not in flying airplanes, but the business side of how airlines operated or didn't operate successfully. And to speed up the story, I really pursued my later high school years and my undergraduate education to be focused on something to do with aviation, not knowing exactly what it was going to be, but I was going to work in the airline industry. And after my undergraduate and having a lot of flight hours behind me, I decided that I might want to go into the flying side of things. And I applied to the Canadian Air Force, and it was a time of downsizing. And fortunately, I was actually accepted, and I could have gone on to pilot training with the Air Force in Canada, but decided that probably wasn't the right path. And I ended up working for an airline in Canada that was new, that became the largest scheduled charter airline in the world at one point, called Canada 3000. And I was in an entry-level job and got it to move through the ranks very quickly. And I quickly learned that I wanted to start my own airline one day. So my entire life pivoted. And I said, one day I'm going to do this. And everybody around me said, you don't have money. You're not smart enough. You don't know what the heck you're doing. Just go get a regular job. Become a teacher. That was my dad's, advice to me, because that's what he was, and to get your summers off. And I said, that's great, but that's not what I want. And I consequently went on to pursue my master's and PhD degrees in the UK in Cardiff, Wales, and got my graduate education in international air transport, which was a really an interesting hybrid degree between business and engineering, among other stuff. And I used that as an opportunity to publish and write. And I was in the right time at the right place, where I became known as somebody that knew something about a new business model in the airline industry called the low-cost carrier, and consequently ended up getting hired into my first real job outside of the aviation business as a professor in airline management with a place called Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University in Daytona Beach, Florida, and spent 5 years there. And I used my off time to publish and speak and really put my flag in the soil, if you will, around this low-cost airline environment, and I left the company to actually be one of the co-founders of a airline on the transatlantic, and we flew Boeing 767s, and we took the company successfully public out of the London AIM Exchange, which is a subset of the London Stock Exchange for smaller, medium-sized companies, and then escaped very quickly, which is the right thing to do in the airline industry, started and run away, and then ended up doing a number of airline startups as a consultant or advisor for different types of organizations around the world, and then continued coming back to higher ed, but always in the world of aviation higher education, whether it was in a faculty or a dean role or head of a school role, and then from there went on to some other industry jobs, and then somehow found myself back in South Florida, my fourth return to Florida as a vice provost at Miami-Dade College, which is the largest public college in the country. And after spending some time at Purdue University and a couple of other stops along the way throughout the country. And then 14 months ago, I was very fortunate to be hired into the first chief innovation officer position here at Nova Southeastern University. And we're the largest private university in the state of Florida with eight facilities throughout the state in Puerto Rico as well, and continue to grow. And that's one hat that I wear and still defining what that means. But my whole life experience has led up to this role to create this new position to advance the university to the next level, but also as the executive director of this emerging center of innovation that I know that we're going to touch on, that's really going to be a new economic development engine for South Florida. And again, encompasses my entire background in terms of skill set and knowledge as to what this means for the future of South Florida.
Wow, that's super exciting. What a story. I appreciate kind of sharing that with you, with us from, you know, the aviation perspective and some of the things that you went through early in your career. That's super exciting. And you've mentioned, you know, chief innovation officer is relatively new domain, relatively new role for a lot of organizations, but I've seen a great emergence of that. You talk to a lot of executives. I talk to a lot of other companies. And you hear that a lot, especially, you know, with kind of the latest trend, not only from the pandemic perspective, but the workforce shifting to the, you know, completely virtual environment. And the need to innovate is just becoming, you know, paramount. So you being kind of the head of the overall innovation for Nova Southeastern University, which, by the way, is my alma mater, one of my degrees I got from NSU, which is super exciting for me to talk to you. Tell us a little bit more about your definition of innovation. What does innovation mean to you? And more importantly, what are some of the strategies that really help you build and foster that culture of innovation within your organization?
So first of all, I'm really happy to talk to you as someone that's been through the NSU environment, and hopefully it was a great experience. If it wasn't, let me know. One call does it all. But I'm really happy. And we were talking earlier about how close the world is in terms of who knows who. And I'm so fortunate to be able to talk to you, and glad that you know about NSU and that you've gone on to your own success. But innovation to me, I probably look at it a little bit differently than most people. And what's interesting too, when I was being interviewed for the position that I'm currently in, I didn't know what I was being interviewed for. I didn't even know the affiliation that was interested in me. I didn't know what the role was. And there were many conversations that took place before I actually made it through these different pathways or hurdles to understand what I was actually being interviewed for. Originally, I thought it might've been the CIA or the FBI, the way it was going. And here I am. And I think that when it comes to the word innovation, and this is how I'm using my current role, is to look at it a little bit differently than most people. And what I find is that the word innovation, although it's relatively new in everyday language, it's been around for history of mankind, but I think we use the term too loosely, and a lot of people don't even understand what innovation is. So from my perspective, it's really about thinking differently. And my one rule that I align with innovation is that there are no rules. And the moment that you put boundaries around the word innovation, you're no longer able to think from an innovative perspective, because it's about removing all of those boundaries around you to be different and think differently. So for me, it's really about a mindset. And that's something that I try to embrace in every environment that I am in. And you'll find that in most environments, that's one of the challenges that you face, is working with other individuals that don't understand innovation, or they think they understand it, but really don't. So there's an education and a communication process in which we teach people to look at real life challenges, develop strategies around those challenges, and then think about how you can commercialize those strategies, which is a pretty simple formula. Here's the problem, here's the solution, let's commercialize it, but let's think about it without any rules around it. And when you open that door of opportunity and then bring it down to earth, great things start to really begin to happen. And to continue on with your question, well, for me, it's about fostering a culture of innovation. So let's first define what it is. And every person that you bring on board your team, or if they're somebody that you're already inheriting, how do you make them understand and become passionate about what it means to develop this innovation mindset so that our culture is defined around it, which also dictates the climate in which you work. And often people don't distinguish between culture and climate, but here's our culture. Here are the kind of individuals, mindsets that we're bringing on, but here's the type of work environment that we actually work in. And is it a collaborative environment? Is it a friendly environment? Do people like coming to work? So I put those things together, and that's very important to establish what your plan looks like from the very beginning before you bring on employee number one, because every individual that you bring onto your team, if they don't understand it and support it and embrace it, it's like that old, you know, conversation of a chain link, and you have one bad link in the chain, then everything could potentially be ruined. It takes one bad apple. So that's a challenge, is finding the right people that have the talent, but also that mindset to be able to embrace change and think differently and really be outside of the box.
No, absolutely. I love some of these examples. And when it comes to innovation, it's also, you know, a lot of times people think of something grandiose, something on a grand scale that you have to completely transform something to really to kind of go through that innovative cycle, which is not really quite the case. You know, innovation could really mean some very small incremental changes to your existing small processes in place. So that's exciting. You know, great insights into that. You mentioned, as you know, you also have another role as a director of Innovation Hub. Is that kind of the summary of that, or the gist of that?
It is, yeah. There's a lot more behind it, but that's the icing on the cake, yeah.
So tell us a little bit more about that strategy. What are you guys building? What's the mission? And would love to hear a little bit more about that initiative.
So it's interesting. I've done a lot of very exciting things in my career, and a lot of it very big. And this is the most exciting initiative that I've ever had the responsibility of leading. And going back roughly 3 years ago, there was a lot of conversation in South Florida as a region, and then Broward County specifically, about the potential of rebranding what Broward is, what South Florida is. And yes, sunshine and beaches is what we're known for, but what else can we add into that mix and think a little bit differently? And there's been a lot of discussion over the years about Broward County and South Florida becoming a tech hub. And the challenge is that you just don't rebrand and become a tech hub. I mean, it takes many years of building and infrastructure and networks and all of the resources that come together to be able to do that. But South Florida as a region is well on its way to being able to do that, especially with the pandemic environment that we're in. There's been a lot of escalation and acceleration of certain things that are beginning to happen. So there's a lot of opportunity. And to speed up where we are right now, when I took on this role 14 months ago, I was asked to lead the creation of a new economic development engine specifically for Broward County, knowing that it would have local, regional, national, and even international impact to a certain degree, but really about building South Florida into this tech hub status over time. So we're one player in that overall all mix, but a very key one. And where we are right now is we're creating an economic development engine that is really aligned with the targeted industries specific to Broward County, specific to the South Florida region. So these are the emerging high tech sectors, if you will, the industries of the future, where there's a lot of investment, a lot of industries relocating or creating satellite operations, or entrepreneurs starting businesses, primarily around sectors like aviation and aerospace, financial services, global logistics. And now I'm finding that there's even opportunities for these virtual headquarters to be created, because headquarters is actually one of the targeted industries, believe it or not. Life sciences, which I would also throw health and medical under that category. Manufacturing, specifically advanced manufacturing, and then marine industries, which is its own world in its own with multiple sub-industries, and then technology. And technology as an industry links to all industries, no matter what anybody says, which is really exciting and why I love the role that I'm in right now. But we're creating a model that is currently under construction physically. We're creating a 54,000 square foot center of innovation, which we believe will be the largest in the Southeast region of the United States, that really acts as a gateway or a portal that links the Tri-County area together, everything from Miami to Fort Lauderdale to Palm Beach, where we can better connect the siloed infrastructure that exists specifically within that technology world. And we're that gorilla glue that's putting all the pieces together so that we have a more collaborative environment and we begin to connect the different networks and resources together around innovation and technology and entrepreneurship being our three themes. And then we've established four very specific pillars, which I define as the formula that supports the entrepreneur, literally from the birth of an idea through the successful exit of a company. And the four pillars are ideate, incubate, accelerate, and post-accelerate. And we're the only model that I can find, not only nationally, but internationally, that literally supports that founder's journey from start to finish so that we can create a menu of options consisting of your appetizers, your entrees, and desserts that fits the profile of the entrepreneur wherever they are in terms of their growth and ability to scale. And then this model, in terms of measuring success, not only for us as a center of innovation, but for us as a region, I'm going to use benchmarks to see where we're going on an annual basis, which would include looking at breakthrough ideation that comes through our center of innovation, among other resources that are being built, new technologies, creation of a brand new talent skills pipeline that has the right credentials for these emerging industry opportunities that have new sets of credentials outside of just degrees that we traditionally are, you know, known for. New jobs, company formation, and then the scaling of early stage and young startup companies. And internally, we'll focus on NSU, faculty, staff, and students, primarily around the ideate, incubate stages, and how do you commercialize that research that traditionally would never have been commercialized. And then outside of NSU, how do we work with industry and entrepreneurs that already have a proof of concept, that have the ability to scale so that they become that next .com? It's not the local small business that's looking to add another chair or another donut in the window. It's how do I get to that next level of scalability and become significantly large to have positive economic impact here on the South region, South Florida region.
Wow, that's super exciting. And definitely, you know, I can't wait for that to be launched, because being heavily plugged into the kind of the startup scene and the angel investing, I'm also collaborating with a lot of other venture funds almost as a scout, and be able to bridge that gap between the entrepreneurs and the kind of the financial institution almost from the investment perspective. It's exciting to see developments like this, because it's definitely needed, it's definitely missing. And it's something that's, you know, especially, you know, in the kind of the South Florida scene, which has been on the rise the last couple of years. It's super exciting to hear that. So yeah. how would, you know, entrepreneurs get access to that? How do you envision kind of that relationship working? And more importantly, as kind of the incubator, almost like accelerator, do you guys also foresee investing early stage and seed stage into some of the startups? Share with us any insights from that perspective.
Sure. So I love the word that you used, being a scout, because when you find, if you do an environmental scan of the South Florida region, there are two key elements that are opportunities, I would say. These are gaps that need to be filled. And one of them is access to talent and skilled credential talent, especially in the technology sector. So how do we improve upon that? And our model will be able to do that by offering new types of certifications in these emerging technology areas, but also access to capital. So when you're scouting for that opportunity, one of the things that we'd like to be able to do is also help plug that hole of being able to establish those networks of funders, whether it's your angels or your venture equity capital, institutional investors, even crowdfunding. How do we better align that with the opportunities that are coming through the Center of Innovation and mix them together so that we create this giant collision station to create win-win opportunities for everybody as we move forward? So that's really important. And then in terms of getting access to the Levan Center, it's going to be an interesting door that has multiple doors inside, depending on where you are and what your needs are. So if you're an entrepreneur, we have the ability to assess where you are in that entrepreneur's journey. If you're just at the idea stage, I got an idea, but I don't know how to put it in the form of a business plan. I don't have that knowledge or network to be able to do it. We can help you with that. And we'll have ways that you'll be able to have entry into the center. You may be somebody that has a small business that's been in existence for 2 years, and you think that it really has the opportunity to scale. We can assess that, see where you are. And then we have a pathway that you can get on track with to get you to that next level. Or you may be around for 5-6 years and you're generating $2-5 million a year in annual revenue, you've got 100-200 employees, and you're looking for that merger, that acquisition, maybe it's that IPO, we have a pathway for you there too. So within our four anchor programs of ideate, incubate, accelerate, and post-accelerate, we'll have an entry process, and we will have a physical team of experienced entrepreneurs and funders as examples that know your industry, that can measure the opportunity for success, and then you will be placed within one of those anchor programs. We also know that not everybody wants to go into one of those anchor programs with a very strict formula, date, time, here's what I need to do. They need to be a little bit more loose and flexible, especially if time is a constraint. So we also have this list of general programs that we're developing that will accommodate any of those different needs moving forward. And we're now at the stage of starting to put together the materials that we'll be putting out into the public arena very shortly about how you can apply to go into some of our programs. And just for the measurement of time, our construction project of a 54,000 square foot facility will be completed the very first week of July and will be opening physically this summer. But we also know that the state of the world is a little bit disrupted at the moment. So we have a plan B so that we have virtual access to the facility, which allows you access to programs, events, and wraparound services that we'll be offering. And we'll continue to do that no matter what the state of the world, but that'll be our phased in opening as the world starts to go back to quote a normal environment. And what we will be doing is creating a membership model. It's a tier-based model where we have 8 different categories that fit the customer in terms of what their needs are. So for example, we have a makerspace, and it's a technology makerspace exclusively focused on the development of software applications and software platforms. And maybe you're looking to be the next entrepreneur in the world of AI or machine learning or virtual computing, whatever that may look like. And we'll be able to link you with our industry partners that are also going to be embedded and housed within the facility to help create that next best thing moving forward. But long story short, our 8 tiers of membership cover all users from start to finish, depending on if you have a small need to a very large need. And here's how you can have virtual access. Here's how you can have on-premise access. You need a hot desk, a co-working space, a dedicated office. We'll have all of that available.
Wow, that's great. That's super exciting. I can't wait for that to open up. And sounds like, you know, you guys are going to have a very busy summer. And I like that you guys have, you know, the plan B, so to say, with the hybrid workforce, with a lot of companies embracing. I think it's very smart to have some type of balance between the virtual environment as well as the kind of this physical location that you guys are actually building right now. Which is, by the way, the background on your video, is that kind of the rendering of what some of that will look like?
It is. It's pretty darn close. It's almost 100% accurate. We have many pictures of the renderings, and I'm literally 2 floors below where we're building out right now. And every week when I go up, it's a completely different change. But more and more, it's starting to look just like the rendering that you see in my background here.
That's super cool. Can't wait. And John, from you've been in, you know, in innovation, you're building a lot of that infrastructure in place to foster that innovation, you know, in our community. Share with us a little bit more your personal perspectives on some of the ideas that really excite you these days. What are some of the trends that you're very passionate about? What are you researching? What are you personally perhaps looking to invest in? Just give us a glimpse into that.
Sure. Well, I think it goes back to the 3 themes that we created for our model around innovation, technology, and entrepreneurship. And I consistently use those 3 words in that order because innovation leads to the creation of new technology. But in order to do that, you need the entrepreneurs to be able to make that happen. So those are the 3 key areas that I'm extremely passionate about and ingrained in every single day of my life. And I really don't sleep that much because I'm constantly coming up with new ideas as we begin to scale up a startup that's going to help startups. And when we think about where the future is going, some people often ask me, well, what is it? Like, if you describe yourself in 1 or 2 words, who are you? What are you? And I like to use the word applied futurist because I think that one of the skill sets that I have, given my background, which is very global in nature, is that I have the ability to utilize trends that are occurring and then use them as predictors for what may happen tomorrow, knowing that tomorrow is just a guesstimate. But with some accuracy, trying to figure out where the world is going and then apply strategies to these opportunities that you actually implement and then measure the success. And every day right now, I'm involved in discussions around the creation of new technologies or taking existing technologies to that next level. What does it look like? And when you ask the question about what is it that we're investing in, we are investing very heavily in the future of spatial computing. And again, 2 words that a lot of people don't know what it means, or maybe have never even heard about it. And if you talk to people in the world of spatial computing, they don't necessarily like those words, because some will say that it's the next evolution of augmented and virtual reality. Some will say it's all the same thing. And it is all the same thing, but spatial computing is the next evolution of that technology that really provides a hands-on experience. And the best way to represent that is you and I could be talking through a virtual headset right now, and you could be in Singapore and I could be in New York, and we could be conducting a business deal. And now we decide we want to go into business with each other. Well, do you have a contract? Well, sure, John, I'll throw it to you. And you throw me the contract. And then, oh, by the way, do you have a pen that I can sign? Oh, sure, I'll throw you the pen through this virtual technology. And next thing you know, I'm signing the contract with this pen, and we've executed a document, and now we're in business. But what that represents is that we had a real life in-person experience, even though it wasn't in person. And we are looking at this in partnership with some companies that are what I'll call co-invested partners in our model moving forward that we haven't announced publicly yet. But this is the future that they're focused on. And we find different ways that we can embed this into our programming, into our events, and even the wraparound services component that we'll be offering, but also be able to utilize this technology, since it's really the pioneering stage of how we help entrepreneurs shape what the future looks like by making their connections to these networks and these funding sources, and doing so at an accelerated path or way of doing things, because we know that things come to market very quickly. And what you did 2 weeks ago may change significantly in two more weeks because of the advancement of technology. So how do we play our part in that? But that's the area that we're focused on more than anything right now in terms of technology.
Right, right, right. No, absolutely. I can definitely relate to that, especially with the current market where everything is going from a technology perspective. I think it definitely makes sense in terms of what some of the segments or the areas of that you guys are looking into. When we talk about kind of building that innovation hub and the overall challenges that come with that, I'm sure a lot of that evolves around surrounding yourself with the like-minded people, with building the team of A players. Share with us some insights, in the sense, your strategies to attract the top talent to your teams. Obviously, you have a great access to a lot of entrepreneurs, doers, and a lot of founders that will be, you know, the end users of that innovation hub, but also the operators, in the sense that will really help you take that to the next level. Curious to get your take on some of the hiring and talent acquisition strategies.
So it's interesting. I've had the opportunity to be on the other end where I've been interviewed multiple times, most of the time unsuccessfully. And I've always wondered, well, gee, how come I didn't land that job that I really wanted? And I recognized that I never responded well to scripted questions that an HR department put together, the standardized questions, to the point that you can memorize any interview knowing exactly what questions are going to be asked of you. Why aren't they getting to the meat of me and my knowledge and my interest, and allowing me the opportunity to know something about the position I'm applying for, to show that I've done research on your industry, on your company, and really get to know me rather than what do you think of this and what do you think of that, or tell me a time when. And there's a time and a place for those types of questions, but I'm often a firm believer that a script doesn't work very well, and that you should have a foundation of a script, but you should be allowed to deviate from the script based on the conversation you're having with a candidate. And I believe it should be more like a fireside chat rather than a bunch of people behind a desk staring at you and you're in the hot chair and making it very uncomfortable for you. So that's not something that I promote and believe it actually works. I believe in putting together more of a chat environment where you can customize according to the candidate that you're interviewing for, because you may find that that person may not be the right candidate for the position they're interviewing for, but you've discovered another talent or skill set in them that is completely applicable to another opportunity that is evolving within your organization. And how do you, one thing that I have a pet peeve of is I hate to see a great opportunity, a great piece of talent walk by and then you're not able to capture them. So I would rather have somebody that's less experienced, that has the right mindset and knows that they're going to be successful in my environment, and train them and allow them to prosper, rather than basing everything on a resume. They must have this, this, and this. And again, there's a time and a place for all of that. But I want to know if a candidate is a big picture or a small picture thinker, because you need both. And where's the right place? And my formula has always been, and I learned some lessons the hard way as a young entrepreneur, that you have to have the right model, you have to have the right plan, but you also have to have the right team. And if one of those elements is missing, then your chance of success is substantially reduced. So I think that one of the biggest challenges when I'm saying all this is actually being able to find the talent and the ability to what I term find an applied futurist, somebody that can really look towards the future, but then also work backward and put in the actual details by dotting I's and crossing T's to make sure that we complete all of the steps that are going to get us to that ultimate goal as we move forward. And that's a very challenging type of skill set to be able to find, especially in the environment that we're now living in. And I'm actually going through interview process right now for multiple positions that are posted and more to come this coming summer. But I also want to know from a candidate, what kind of preparation did they do leading up to this? Because the fact that you're sitting in front of us interviewing means that there's something about you. And I want to know what you did. What do you know about my industry? What do you know about this company? What do you think you know about the role? Your answers may not be correct because we haven't given you all the information, but it's a great way to see how somebody thinks compared to other individuals. And I also want to know what makes you the best of the best. Why are you the one that should have this opportunity? Why do you want to join this organization? And I also like to ask a question that sometimes gets people, you know, off of their chair a little bit. And I said, well, what's your ultimate lifelong career dream? What do you really want to do? What are your future goals? Uh-huh. And people will be afraid to answer that because they want the job. They don't want to tell you they're going to leave. But I fully recognize that people don't stay in one job any longer. They don't stay with the same organization any longer. They're going to jump. So how do we get you in, understand your long-term goals to make you the best that you're going to be in the time that we have you, and then also set you up for success when you do leave, because it's not a case of if, it's when. And if you have a successful employee that goes on, they're going to be your best advocate and voice about the experience they had with your organization, then other great positive things begin to happen. And then really to conclude, you want to retain when you possibly can, but I'm a believer that you need to provide a culture of open innovation. You need to be able to support and embrace that change, and everybody on your team must be able to as well. And I also believe that you compensate above the market trends in order to not only recruit, but to retain that individual. And there's scientific proof that if you pay someone too much, they're not productive. If you pay them too little, they're not productive. But what's that happy medium that allows somebody to think, gee, I'm not going to go looking for the next best thing while I'm here? It allows me an opportunity for growth. I believe in succession planning, even if that person may not be there, but you have to have a plan and show that there are growth opportunities and treat your people well. And outside of the standard benefits, what other things can you add into that environment that are a little bit different? And I think that time is probably the most important asset that anyone does not have any longer. So how do you give time to people so they can disconnect and still be wildly successful within their personal and professional life?
Right, absolutely. And I love these examples in a way to summarize, you know, instead of approaching an interview, rather, you know, creating an environment of that two-way street dialogue, where you provide an opportunity for the interviewee, you know, to ask you all of the questions to see if it's also the right fit for them. Because a lot of times in, you know, my company serving the talent acquisition space, we see that a lot. We hear that a lot, where, you know, it's just a one-way conversation, where it's just that typical interviewer asking just a bunch of questions off of the resume. And it's, you know, there's a little substance to that in the sense that it's not really of that long-term relationship building exercise and really trying to understand if there is a personality fit, if there is a skills match. And more importantly, one thing that I always try to keep in mind when interviewing and hiring is hiring for strength, meaning what is the strength that's missing on our team? Because a lot of times I hear these interviews, it's almost like, can I tolerate that particular individual, or can I deal with that lack of weakness? So that's, you know, some of the interesting points that you were making as you were talking through that talent acquisition strategy that you have. And the last few questions I have for you is around what is your content diet? Most of all, what do you consume on a daily basis when it comes to learning, researching? What are some of the blogs or some of the, you know, Twitter profiles that you follow? Share with us any links that, you know, are bookmarked on, you know, in John's browser.
Well, so if it to kind of put it, you have to see where I'm at right now. I have three computer screens that surround me. It looks like a NASA launch operations facility. And then I've got my two phones and I've got my tablet, and everything is connected to something somewhere.
I would not expect anything less from a chief information
officer. Well, I feel like I'm commanding the world from here with all these different buttons. I'm afraid to push the red one here. But it's really exciting because I'm like a sponge, and I've always been since I was, you know, born. And my parents, I know I drove them crazy because I was constantly asking questions, just want to learn, and I want to know a lot about a lot. So I definitely keep abreast of social media channels, all of them, and getting into some more than others now. And now another one's been added, and you got this Clubhouse thing you got to add in and become part of that. And there's just more and more, but the focus of time is becoming very important. So how do you know what's going on every day in the world, but still have time to focus on what you need to do during your day job, so to speak? So I look at social media channels. I look at live, what I call live publications. So today's newest article on something. And I look at it very globally in perspective, because you'll find technically there are six different regions of the world, and each piece of the world has its own set of trends and challenges and opportunities and strategies that overlap with the rest of the world. And I like to know what's going on or what's working or not working somewhere else that you may think about in your own environment, because everything is global these days. And then I also do pay attention to academic journals. And by the time they're published, they're usually out of date, but there's a lot of history that you can take out of those academic journals and then apply that theoretical academic thought into real life industry thought, where often it's very difficult to cross-pollinate those two different worlds. I'll look at industry trade publications. I'd like to say I have a lot of time to read books, and I really don't, but I do like history, because history is usually a great predictor of the future. So what are those stories? And a lot of it, I often go back to World War II, World War I type scenarios, because there's so much to learn out of what's happened in history about and what that means for the future. And I'm very keen on following whoever today's leaders are, especially in the world of technologies, but it's the standards. It's your Elon Musk, it's your Bill Gates, it's your Jeff Bezos, it's your Reed Hastings of the world. And what are they doing? And I like them because they're disruptors. So I like to follow people that I consider to be disruptors and changing the world for the good or the bad, and learning from what they do. So the last thing that I have on my schedule is time, unfortunately. And I'm trying to always battle, how do you take time to learn about what's going on every day? And then more importantly, how do you take time for yourself? And that self-care management piece is one that I have not mastered. I'm not even close to it. And I think that's a huge opportunity moving forward for anybody, especially if you're an entrepreneur. You got to take time for yourself. Otherwise, it's going to catch up with you at the end of the day. So I'm better at saying it than practicing it myself, but it's so important to be able to follow that.
Right. No, I love that analogy. And John, last but not least, what are you currently reading in terms of a book? And is there a book that you always recommend to others? And why is that?
So I love this question, because this isn't something that typically I get asked, and it's great. So as I mentioned, I don't have a lot of time to do a lot of reading. However, the president
about making the time, right?
making the time. So I write books, and I don't have time to write books anymore either, unfortunately. But our president, Dr. Hanbury, said, John, I'm reading this book. I don't really get it, but I think you're going to get it because you know a little bit about technology and you can see the future. You got to read this book. Uh-huh. So about 2 weeks ago, he said, get the book Spin, S-P-I-N, by Patricia Cornwell. And if you follow Patricia as an author, she does a lot of stuff in the Virginia, Washington, D.C. area around military and technology and some really cool stuff. But I'm just into that book right now. And it's really about a NASA investigator turned Space Force pilot that recognizes that some top secret things been happening for years around the world. And she's immersed in it. And she's now met her twin sister she didn't know she had. And now they go off into space and explore different things. And I don't know what's going to happen, but they're in space doing some wild stuff. And there's all these technologies that have been created that don't even exist in real life. And I keep thinking, are they reality? Could this really happen? And there's a lot of, yeah, maybe. So that's what I'm reading right now. And then one of my favorite books, which is also one of my favorite all-time movies, and I did see the movie first before I read the book, it's called Run Silent, Run Deep by Edward Beach. And the movie came out in 1958, and it starred Clark Gable and Burt Lancaster. It's a black and white World War II submarine film. There are a lot of lessons to be learned from the book and from the movie. And to put it in a summarized, quick, accelerated snapshot, it's about a naval submarine commander who previously lost a ship. He was sunk by the Japanese, has a grudge. He's now been assigned to become the commander of the submarine, the travel across the Pacific Ocean to Japan, to a place called the Bungo Straits, and their target is to take out something which also includes the ship that sunk his previous vessel. And the whole storyline there is that it's about resilience and thinking differently and being innovative underwater when you're blind, knowing that you've been sent into a war zone in which everybody thinks you're never going to come back from. It's a one-way trip, and they successfully accomplish the mission. But the title, Run Silent, Run Deep, is something that I use in my everyday language with individuals, that everybody wants to tell everybody what they're doing and go out to the media and do a press release. Woo. Well, the best thing you can do is, you've got a great idea, run silent, run deep, and then come out big without anybody knowing. It's a surprise, but it's a wonderful book and a great movie in terms of inspiration and resilience and how to get things done when everybody says you're not going to be able to do it.
Wow, that's super cool. I appreciate those recommendations. And for our listeners, we'll make those titles available in the episode notes. John, can't thank you enough for this great conversation. Personally learned quite a bit. Definitely going to stay in touch with you, do another episode in the near future. Once you guys launch, looking forward to getting, you know, to hearing how, you know, the progress and all of the growth happening. So much appreciate your time, and we'll talk soon.
Well, I thank you for the opportunity. We look forward to getting you here to tour our Levant Center at any time. And you bring the mask, I'll bring the hard hat, and look forward to chatting with you again. And again, thanks for the opportunity. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.